the various amendments the Social Security Act created all this, about total thousands of pages, and that doesn't even include the tens of thousands of pages of regulations created. Medicare has proven to be a social, political, bureaucratic, and fiscal tar baby, or morass, as Bill Barnes said, for legislators, taxpayers, old people, and providers. Is this what Alaska really wants to duplicate? We don't think so. We don't think that SB 83 is the solution to this. We don't support the bill, so what do we support? We support the establishment of a coherent health policy for Alaska. We don't have one. We support a complete redoing of the Healthcare Containment Task Force report based on a professional analysis of the healthcare situation in Alaska with standardized, above-board, and even-handed methodology and with the full cooperation of physicians and hospitals and other providers in supplying data. We support watchful analysis and observation of other states and national proposed solutions to the problem of providing equitable health care to all Americans at reasonable cost. We're a small state, and we can ill afford to be out on point when larger states with more resources, intellectual, fiscal, and infrastructure have been unable as yet to demonstrate a successful solution. And I might add that many health economists, Dewey Reinhardt and others, that fixing provider costs does not restrain the spiraling, restrain spiraling healthcare expenditure. We support full implementation of those current cost-saving measures, which has been demonstrated to reduce costs without legislation or without the creation of bureaucracy. Measures such as those which very admirably reduced healthcare costs for state employees by $20 million fiscal 1990. And I understand that that cost has been held steady for this year, so that represents, over and above inflation, a great saving. And finally, we support immediate and concrete measures to deal with Alaska's uninsured and underinsured with the establishment of streamlined benefits packages, care management systems, mandated risk pooling for currently uninsurable individuals, and state subsidies and premiums for certain individuals. And Senate Bills 73 and 74, by Senator Kutula contain such provisions, and I see Senate Bill, or revised Senate Bill 83, as now containing some of those provisions and trying to be an omnibus bill, sort of all things to all people, and it may be 8 pages a few days ago, now it's 11 pages. In short order, it may be many pages more. Thank you very much. Sorry to take so much time.
Thank you, Dr. Corson. Any questions for the doctor? I suppose for the record, I should say that Dr. Corson is my ophthalmologist, although he may not remember because it's been more than two years since I was there. We'll go ahead and take Bruce Moore in Anchorage, and then we'll go to Petersburg. So if Mr. Grandy in Petersburg would please be ready. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you. My name is Bruce Moore. I'm an insurance broker and have been for about 20 years. I represent some 400 employers in the group. In the area of employee benefits and health care. Also, chairman of the health committee for the Alaska Association of Health Underwriters. We've been active on a legislative front for a number of years, trying to address what we feel is the major issue in the state, which has been previously talked about, and that is the problem of uninsurable. This bill, however, creates some real concerns for me personally and as a consultant, and also for our association. That is, that we are indeed establishing a bureaucracy that I have not seen the fiscal note on it, but quite scary. It also seems to have been designed based on some assumptions that I disagree with. One is that the larger the size, the lower the cost. If that was the case, the state of Alaska employee group would have the lowest cost in the state. That is not the case. The current state plan has the ability or is designed in such a way that current municipalities, school districts, and such can join that plan on a voluntary basis, where in fact a number of those groups have elected not to join that plan, and for a simple reason, that is, they can get better prices on their own than they can by being part of that plan. That would lead us to believe that by mandating those groups to join the state health plan, the healthy groups that can get good rates now would be supporting those groups that are less healthy. It also made the assumption or made the statement in this committee that there is a restriction of markets or limitation of markets for employer and small employer groups. I find this interesting. plans I represent. There's only a couple of them with more than 50 employees, typical in the state of Alaska. I represent a number of different insurance companies and get called every week by new insurance companies that want me to write business with them. There is no limitation, no limited access to carriers that are willing to write to smaller groups. The only restrictions are is that those carriers only want to write to groups that are healthy. The problem in the state of Alaska is not a problem of access to health insurance. The problem of access to health insurance are those that are uninsurable. Also, some 90,000 people, which I was not aware of until reading this bill, that are supposedly uninsured in the state, I question how many of those are truly uninsurable and how many of those are just simply unwilling to pay the premium. I'm a father of 6 children and 2 grandchildren. I have a couple of children of my own that have grown up in the insurance industry as beneficiaries, so to speak, that are now in the workforce and are not willing to spend $30 a month for their share of the employer's premiums during the health plan simply because they feel they'll never get sick. It's interesting to me that this bill seems to take on the position that they're going to force government entities and the people in the state of Alaska to be insured whether or not they want to. I think the real question is the question of uninsurables. I think serious consideration should be given to Senator Petrula's bill, and our association supports that wholeheartedly. In the last 2 to 3 years, we have supported similar legislation in Juneau. We find it interesting that legislation has been killed in committee and it's never been brought up for a full vote. We're all looking for ways to save in the cost of health care. But the basic underlying reason for the cost of health care is the demand of the American public to have the finest health care system in the world. We are currently spending in the United States more money for health care than we are for defense or education. Currently, as stated in the previous bill, some 11.7% of our gross national product. If we're going to save and reduce the cost of health care, then we have to create an awareness in the American people and the people in the state of Alaska that health care is no longer a high priority to them. My son was born with a major heart condition and had open heart surgery when he was 7 months old, and in deciding where he was going to have heart surgery, the cost did not enter into it. I simply did the checking and found out that the Mayo Clinic, in my opinion, was the best it was, but he paid the plane fare and the extra cost to have him go to the Mayo Clinic, and today he is alive and well. If this task force had its way by sound, they would control the cost that the pediatric cardiologist could charge in the state of Alaska and would again force me to take my child to the Mayo Clinic where the best surgeons can afford to charge or are able to charge the price they feel their services are worth. If you like the system of controlling the cost of health care, then you should revisit a military hospital and stand in line for an aspirin someday. I think the key is that we all want to control the cost, but creating a large bureaucracy to try to force feed their views on the general public, I have some real problems with it. That's all I have.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple quick comments. This is Senator Duncan. Just a couple quick comments, Mr. Moore. First of all, I just want to make it clear, although I'm losing the battle, I'm making it clear to people that no one's being mandated to join any state health plan of any kind. It's just not happening. This is not a state employee bill. It doesn't mention state employees in the bill. There's no state health plan anybody being mandated to join. So a careful reading of the bill would make that clear. It's interesting, and I don't want to get a long discussion with you, but it's interesting to hear the comments, and I've heard it before, that there's no problem with access to health insurance by any employer in the state or any group of employers in the state, or maybe even in the nation. I do know, and I've got a copy of from the Health Insurance Carrier Industry Manual, of a list of 29, no quote list, of 29 businesses that there's a limited group, I quote, there's a limited group of industries where past results have proven it is highly unlikely that satisfactory underwriting results can be attained with respect to their medical and dental coverage. In the interest of directing our resources to those opportunities with the highest probability of success, quotations are not to be issued to groups on the no quote list shown below. And there's 29 of those. And there's also a suspect list that has 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 on it. So I don't want to get into a long discussion, but it's clear to me that there are certain businesses and industries that do not have access. And I'm not trying to take on insurance companies and carriers and the industry or the providers. It's just a fact of life, and we're trying to address that.
Well, the issue of access, you're correct. There are some industries and some insurance companies, I analyze some insurance companies are not excited about writing. There's an obvious reason for that. They're not profitable. If we allow those non-profitable, so to speak, industries to join into this large state-provided program, then the state-provided program would not be profitable either, which would increase their cost. The access to those industries is still available through the system of individual health insurance policy. One of those restricted groups is bars. For the reason that it is not a group carriers do not want to provide group health insurance to a bar and tavern is because of the high turnover of employees. High turnover of employees increases the cost of group coverage to the carrier. Therefore, the way that we provide access to health care for those types of organizations is simply write individual health insurance policies on those employees who want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, Madam Chair, and I'm not going to go into a long debate with you. The other way, of course, to provide health care to those individuals is we do it through uncompensated care because they can't get access and they finally end up at the hospital with a catastrophic illness or at the doctors and they can't pay for it. But it's interesting to note that you say it's only the industries that aren't profitable. Boy, I don't know, when I look down through this list, some of these people may become a little bit concerned about that statement. Apparel and home furnishings, retail, automobile dealerships, automobile manufacturing, food stores, hospitals and medically oriented groups, hotels, lodging places, if they're not profitable, what the heck, why are hotels and lodging places and food stores in business? The real reason they're not quoted, I think you got to it, is one, they're high turnover, they're low paid individuals, and it's a high administrative cost for the insurance industry, and they're better off putting their efforts somewhere else where they can make an easier dollar. And I don't want to debate it, but we're trying to resolve that problem.
Well, again, I don't want to debate either, but I think that's a key item in the reason of the design of this bill. I'm not sure where you got that list from, but I have a number of business cards. Out of the 400 employers that I represent, all of those industries you just mentioned are on my list. So there is, again, I'm not sure where you got that list, but any of the people that you know in that area, I'd be glad to give you my business card and send them to me.
Mr. Moore, we have your phone number. Sandra Duncan can call you. We're going to go on to Petersburg to Gary Grandy. When we finish there, we'll go to Ketchikan. We have two people there and at least three more in Anchorage. Mr. Grandy. Are you still online?
Didn't receive a message saying sorry.
Is Petersburg still online?
I'm sorry. I'm the administrator of Petersburg General Hospital Long-Term Care Facility in Petersburg, and I compliment Senator Duncan on his reducing those who are involved population base to about 20,000. However, my remarks still have merit. My concern, as I see it, is I guess I'm tired at this point of hearing that medical care is out of control. And these 20% increases in 5 years are terrible, and we're not getting a good deal. 11% GNP in this country of medical care, I don't see where that is a problem. What is there any more important to a person anymore than their health, other than food and water? We pay $100,000 to $150,000 for homes, and that costs us $10,000 to $15,000 a year in payments. We think nothing of it. We buy alcohol, we have pull tabs, and people go and spend $800 paycheck on pull tabs. We have expensive vacations down south. We're paying for clothing now in shoes and suits that are much more than 20% what they were 5 years ago. Price a car nowadays that was 5 years ago $12,000 and now costs $20,000. And we pay thousands of dollars a year for that. And then we have to pay health care insurance. Approximately 400 $1,500 a year, and this takes care of our medical needs. To me, it is a bargain. To me, it is good. Let's compare it to education, for example. The school teachers in this community average over $40,000 a year. My nurses at the hospital average about $30,000 a year. And they went to school and are educated and are just as much professionals as the school teachers. So I get a little bit bent out of shape when I hear that we have problems with health care in this state. I really feel that we're getting a good deal. And a lot of it has to do with volume. Last year, our hospital had a $15,000 loss. This year, we are projecting a $270,000 loss because our volume in patients is down approximately 15%. It creates quite a problem. One of the biggest problems that I see, and we have Aetna insurance, the same as the state employees, at our hospital for our employees. 3 years ago, we asked Aetna to provide us with a list and a total amount of premium that, well, we know what the premiums were, but we wanted to know what the claims were. They provided us with those claims. 2 years ago, we asked for the same information. They said, we cannot provide that to you any longer. We did our own in-house study through a survey with our employees, and we determined that our claims were approximately $25,000 a year less than what we were paying in premiums. That's only one particular year. I heard mentioned that Aetna had a $20 million profit on all of the insurance premiums. I think those sort of things need to be looked at very carefully. I reiterate what has been said by many others. Deductibles are important, and I think that you place high deductibles, people think twice before they go to the doctor with a sniffle or a runny nose, and I do not believe that it creates additional problems of people staying away and then later having a major problem. I think that we need to direct our efforts towards wellness programs very heavily, teaching people to exercise properly. We need to have diet clinics talking about what people eat, about alcohol and smoking and all of the other problems. Two will be the ways that will reduce the cost of health care in this state. I have questions concerning this bill. It was mentioned that these small rural communities would not be impacted now, but they would be later. I'm not sure what was meant by that. I'm not sure where it mentions that by February 15th, 1993, and you have to understand I do not have the updated version, that the indigents will be addressed. I still question who is going to pay for these things. The bill seems to indicate that the state is going to procure insurance for some of these groups of people who are having trouble getting insurance. I guess what they're saying is that they can't afford to pay the $400 a month for a family. Therefore, the state's going to get an insurance company with a premium for $200 because they've made the hospitals cut their costs in half. That's absolutely ridiculous to think that the hospitals are going to stay in existence by reducing that drastically to where these employers then can afford to pay insurance for their employees. I guess I should also say that it's good to hear that the Anchorage physicians travel to the rural communities. We have been very unsuccessful in recruiting physicians to come into our small rural communities in Southeast Alaska. We have a shortage of physicians in here, and I want that to be understood. And with that, I will conclude my remarks. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Randy?
I don't have any questions, Madam Chair, but there is a new bill. I appreciate your testimony, and a lot of the information, I think, can be, a lot of your questions can be clarified. I'd advise you to call my office, 465-4766, drop a letter by or whatever. We'll get you a copy of the bill and some information.
Now to Ketchikan, first to Roger Stone.
Yes, my name is Roger Stone. I'm Chief Financial Officer for Ketchikan General Hospital. First of all, I'd like to state that we appreciate Senator Duncan's concern for containing health care costs and for the under and uninsured residents and citizens of the state of Alaska. However, I wish to express our strong opposition to this proposal on a number of fronts. First of all, Ed, when you refer back to the task force report, there's a number of statements in there which are misleading or at least not based on all of the facts. First, the creation of another bureaucratic authority is not going to accomplish anything that's not already out there. It's only going to be another costly layer of bureaucracy forcing existing healthcare institutions in the state to work through another rate-setting mechanism and increasing costs of all local healthcare facilities. Secondly, it will not reduce cost shifting and potentially will only make it worse working through the bureaucratic maze. The next point is that in Ketchikan, at least, we have a local governing board. We're a nonprofit community hospital, and our local governing board must approve all of our rate increases. This particular bill would potentially dilute responsible local control that's already in place. In the last 2 years, we have increased rates in 1990 by 4%, and we're planning on a 5% increase this year. At the same time, healthcare insurance providers in the state of Alaska, in particular the two largest companies, are planning on 18 to 23% inflation factors in their premiums for this next year. And I don't see where those are coming from necessarily. There's a number of reasons cited for that, but certainly that's far in excess of our increases in charges. Another area that we have great concern in is using 1989 as a base. Our unreimbursed care that we've provided in our community has increased by over 319% to $2.6 million for the year ending June 30th of 91, projected right now, and the increase for 1992, for our budget year 92, ending 6/30 of 92, will be 380% over 1989, estimated at this point to be $3.1 million. That's uncompensated care that we're providing in the community. Certainly, we are not increasing costs directly. We're absorbing most of that. And at the same time that increase has taken place, we've only increased our rates on an average of 4 to 5% a year. We're able to do that by increasing efficiencies, but there comes an end to how far you can go with that, and certainly we're very close to that at this point. Our budget for this year, ending June 30th, is about $17 million, and for next year is anticipated to be about $20 million. So you can see that that's a very large chunk. This bill, as it's currently proposed, certainly isn't going to make any kind of a dent in that uncompensated care. In fact, it's only going to increase the uncompensated care that we're forced to provide because we deny care to no one. Next, the creation of a new authority would considerably increase the already burdensome state bureaucracy and certainly do a lot to increase institutional costs, not contain them. I think if you look at the failure of the Medicaid Rate Commission and the absolute miserable situation that healthcare providers are faced with in working through that maze and the complete breakdown of the Medicaid mechanism in the state of Alaska, that would be certainly the strongest example that you can show that another layer of bureaucracy is not going to help anything. As one of the other testifiers stated, our current situation is that our negotiations regarding reimbursements and rates with the Rate Commission go clear back to 1987, and here we are almost at the end of fiscal 91 looking at fiscal 92. One other institution in the state has to deal with retroactive reimbursement systems going back 6 years. That adds a tremendous burden to costs statewide. In addition, there's a lot of consideration of utilization standards. Even if utilization standards somehow are put in place by this anticipated legislation, it's not going to affect or change utilization patterns. And that's driven in large part by reimbursement. So unless you can tell people not to get sick, certainly the people who are coming in for uncompensated care and utilizing the facilities that are out there are going to continue to do that. The whole system that's proposed is similar to the wage price systems that have gone into place in other economic systems over the past 30 or 40 years and have always failed. I think the thing that's overlooked here when we're talking about health care costs, we're talking about health care costs to the citizens of the state of Alaska. This bill does not do anything to contain institutional costs. All it does is affect reimbursement rates. Our costs are driven by the competitive environment in which we do business and by the vendors and the various other agencies and businesses that we have to deal with in order to provide service within the community. I noticed that it was very interesting that on Senator Duncan's no quote list, he said that there was a hospital on that. It'd be interesting to find out In addition to those points, Dr. David Johnson, who was the other testifier here, had to leave because he had to go back to his office to take care of a patient. But he did ask me to pass along that the bill as it currently is proposed will not increase access. It will in essence decrease it. But we do business in a very competitive environment, and if we cannot provide appropriate incentives, how can we attract the doctors and professionals we need, especially in the remote areas of the state and in Southeast Alaska where we do business? And the final point, that we're a community hospital operated on a not-for-profit basis. One of the reasons that we have large turnover is, and some of the doctor's offices in town also have large turnover, is because they go down the street to go to work for the state of Alaska in a healthcare environment which provides substantially less risk and substantially better compensation. So with that, I would conclude my remarks.
Thank you. Any questions for Mr. Stone? Senator Collins.
To what do you attribute the significant increase in your uncompensated care?
Frankly, that's a very good question. Right now, we're going back through our utilization patterns to determine why we're seeing a lot of this. One of the things that has a very large impact on it is that within the last year, and I don't exactly know the time frame, the Alaska Native Health System changed to using Medicaid as primary coverage. And as a result of that, and as a result of the, again, inefficient mechanisms in place with A&H that we're having to cope with, there are some very large reductions that are going on that are not covered by A&H because the A&H-covered individuals failed to get proper pre-authorizations and did not work through their own system. And as a result of that, we're seeing a significant increase in uncompensated care from that venue. Another aspect in our particular situation is that we have a Hill Burton obligation which we are trying to use up, and as everyone knows, Hill Burton obligation is basically in lieu of debt service, and we feel it's our responsibility to the community to use that obligation as we best possibly can, and there's a limited time frame that HICFA allows us to use that obligation in. That hasn't affected the overall pattern of uncompensated care. However, we are experiencing a significantly increase in applications for Hill Burton relief from medical bills. And I don't know whether that's indicative of the uninsured population of our community growing, or the economic conditions in our community, or just where it's coming from. It's difficult to get a handle on that.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, now to Anchorage and Mr. Dave Hennigan.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to again testify before the committee. As I indicated at our last hearing, and Senator Duncan closed by saying, yeah, but the healthcare industry proposed that we do more study. And I would have to agree, when we presented our case to the Senator Duncan through the Alaska State Hospital and Nursing Home Association, we did in fact propose a plan where we reprioritized his original Senate Bill 83 and put it more in perspective and learn by study, first of all, what the issues really were. And we did conclude at the end that we would propose reporting back to the legislature the results of that study. Unfortunately, the real reason why that fell on deaf ears had to do with the fact that it did require spending additional money to address the issue of uncompensated care. We proposed in our modified language that Senate Bill 83 mandate the medically needy option, which is a way to begin to whittle away at the problem of uncompensated care. There isn't any way, we believe there's not any way, that we can find a solution with one fell swoop. The realities of it are we have to move slowly, pick away at it, and at some point in time grip the problem. And I would like to tell a little story of that we are facing at Providence Hospital that kind kind of sets the tone for what you've heard today so far, and that regulation does not remedy spiraling healthcare costs, but rather it's the reason for spiraling healthcare costs. The story I have is in November of 1990, the VA system adopted a version of what's called DRGs. And as you all know, that's more or less what Senator Duncan's bill is testing, and that's a fee schedule in effect. So that, despite the testimony that the healthcare industry presented the VA system, indicating that most institutions would be affected to the extent of at least a 40% reduction in payments, the federal system said, that isn't enough, we're going to go ahead and do it anyway. And they have. And to this date, the VA system of DRGs has been in place since November, and we have not received any money to pay for the care that we've rendered. And the reason, pure and simple, is they have not the means in which to manage this new regulation. So, all in all I'm trying to suggest is that regulation is very, very expensive, that the fiscal note of this affair here is going to be well into the millions of dollars, and we can't see how that's going to solve the problem. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Hennigan?
No, I'll
take that. And I believe we have Mr. David Frazier there in Anchorage.
Right, David Frazier. I've been in the insurance business in the state of Alaska since 1969. I'm somewhat at a disadvantage to you all that because we've just received the working draft of the revision to SB 83. So I haven't had an opportunity to completely absorb the impact of those changes. I appreciate Senator Duncan's altruistic attempt to resolve medical issues here in the state of Alaska, and I share those concerns with him. However, my main question would be, how do we, or how does the state of Alaska intend to provide a system through price control or whatever, a utilization control that hasn't worked in other bureaucracies such as Medicare, Medicaid, the VA system, and the public health service system. All those systems are limping along today. The beneficiaries and patients that are provided care under those systems are distraught about those systems, and I think we need to bring those people into this arena to discuss their concerns about how those particular organizations deliver care to them, so that we can project how this new authority might provide care to the citizens of Alaska. I appreciate the extension of time that the committee has provided, and would appreciate an opportunity in the future to speak to the revised bill here, and hope I can do so in the near future. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Frazier? Is there anyone else on the teleconference network who'd like to testify today? That's all the names I have. Okay, if there's no one else out there, with that, we will adjourn the meeting. Thank you all.
Yeah.